Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
Merry Christmas, Joe Ho Ho. We don't normally get to do a podcast after EPT Prague. We're normally done for the year. And that means I don't normally get to say Merry Christmas, but we get to do a pre-Christmas special. We get to do an end-of-year special, and I'm very excited about it.
That's right. Lots of stuff to talk about here at the end of the year and looking forward to 2025. Coming up on today's show, it is time to show 2024 to the door. We just wrapped EPT Prague, and despite relatively low expectations, I'd say it was one of the best events we've ever had.
It was huge.
More on that later. And as a result, we'll be having one of EPT Prague's main characters, just the winner of the main event, Pedro Marksh, will be on the show.
Excellent.
Some announcements have been made about 2025, some of them good, some of them bad. I got a Hendemob flag while I was out in Prague.
Yes.
I guess we can talk about at least one of the hands I played.
Yeah,
we said
sure.
We should talk about a hand from time to time. And I think it'd be fun to pick out the hand I think I played the worst.
Fair enough.
I was thinking we could call it Hand of the Day, but since it's the only one we've done in 2024, we should call it Hand of the Year.
Oh, how quickly they forget. My sevens hand from the previous episode of the podcast?
I know. There's been a few other hands that have squeaked their way in throughout the rest of the year, but hopefully we're going to make strategy a little bit more of a thing coming up in 2025.
Also, if you want to win a meaningless award, who am I to stand in your way?
Hand of the year. I'm giving it to myself. And the final super fan of 2024 is a fella by the name of Harry Kirby. Not strictly a super fan. Harry actually works on the EPT with us on the TV side. He produces some of the segments, some of the interviews. You might hear his voice, actually. If you watch the live streams, you can hear Harry asking the players questions from time to time. He's also a legitimate film director. He is a super fan. And Harry, whose film is now on Netflix called Accident Man 2, Hitman's Holiday, has chosen action movies in general as his specialist subject.
I love the fact that we can get legitimate film directors to come and be kind of floor producers and speak to players at EPTs. How about we bring David Fincher to Monte Carlo to ask players like how they're feeling coming into day four of the main event?
That would be awesome. You know, speaking of film directors, too, by the way, this time of year, you guys may not be aware of this or not, but if you've seen a Mariah Carey Christmas special floating around last year, I think there's another one this year. I think it was on my last flight. Joseph Kahn, former guest on this podcast, directed that Christmas special. So nice. If you're into that sort of thing, you can support a former guest of ours that way. I've had very little time to watch movies or TV since the last show.
Same.
But I think that I'm going to be watching a lot over the next few weeks, and there might not be that much poker for us to talk about. So when we're back next year, let's just do everything. Let's just do a whole thing.
I'm down with that. I would just give a quick recommendation to The Old Man, which is on Disney Plus in the UK. Second season dropped very recently, and I just watched it from the start all the way through to the end of the second season. Very much enjoyed that show. Starts off going in one direction, then it kind of takes a bit of a pivot midway through, and you're like, I'm not sure where this is going, and then you really enjoy where it's going. Very, very smart series.
That's cool. I've been watching Day of the Jackal, and then I found myself, as usual, going, this should have been a movie, and then I realized it was a movie twice.
Yes. So it's a book that has led to many adaptations over the years. Obviously, we do have a super fan this week. We want super fans for the new year. We did
super fans and super fans.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And we did say on the last episode that we wanted to try and make the application process a little bit easier. Thank you to producer Chris and for StatTrick for sorting out an email address that you can now use to apply to be on the show. It is very simply superfans@pokerstarsint.com. The int meaning international. So pokerstarsint.com. That email address will take you directly through to the production team. And the great thing is it's a private communication channel, so they can get in touch with you, reply to your email address, get your details, book you in, send you the link to be on the show, and we'll try and line up people for the next episode. We've also been looking at the list of, I think it was Empire's top 100 movies ever made, and just looking at some suggestions of films that we haven't yet had as specialist subjects. But I also want to clarify, and I know it's something you like to do as well, Joe.
Yep.
It's not a movie segment per se. It doesn't have to be about a movie. I know it's very easy to lean into people's favorite films, but we can do general knowledge. We can do an author. You know, think of a lowbrow version of the TV show Mastermind. Pick a specialist subject, an area that you know something about. And hey, if Joe knows nothing about it, you stand a better chance of winning, right?
There's literally no limit to the amount of times we could just be like, we're going to do general trivia. And that's something that I always find interesting. I think most people in the audience find general trivia pretty interesting too. Not a subject I will turn down unless we've done it 4 or 5 weeks in a row. So yeah, sky's sort of the limit with the sorts of things you can choose. And of course, keep in mind that whatever you do choose, the more specific you make it, the more it might be just someone reading a Wikipedia page and getting the answers off of there.
Yeah, it's a quick thing. Superfan singular, not superfans. Superfan at pokerstarsint.com is the new email address. Not that you can't still use Discord to apply. We've got the dedicated channel there. And don't forget the podcast discussion channel as well. We're very interested in having a conversation with you guys about the show, about stuff that's going on in the world of PokerStars in general. And as ever, there is a link to the PokerStars Discord server in the podcast description. So we'll get to our Prague recap in a moment, Joe. But while we were in Prague, was the kind of disappointing news that we won't be going to Paris in February.
Yeah, so not the first EPT cancellation we've ever had to make happen, although I think the only ones I can think of were pandemic-related. Yep. I think this is the first time an entire event has been canceled on our watch. And look, me personally, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be disappointed, obviously. Paris was a great new addition the last few years. I was just sort of getting warmed up to the idea of having Paris. But when something like this happens, I get kind of sick to my stomach. And I'm like, are people going to get in trouble over this? Are people going to lose their jobs? What's the general mood about this, James?
The general mood is one of disappointment. I think most people will be okay. I think the people you have to think about are the people who are working in card clubs and casinos in Paris, which I think are going to have to close their doors very soon because of just this regulatory uncertainty about their future. And just to be clear, that is what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with ongoing changes in the legal landscape in France and needing clarification from the government, which is not in a good place right now if you've been watching the news. And the event just can't go ahead. Now, the optimism, the positive part of this is that there is a possibility, there is a chance that this event could be rescheduled later in the year, that EPT Paris could take place maybe in the second half of 2025. Sadly, there is no way it can take place in February in the current climate, and it's too soon, and we've said this a million times on the live stream, and it is a fact that we can't just pull together a huge event on the scale of an EPT.
And quality.
At the level and quality that we would run a live event at short notice. So sadly, it's not like so we can just deploy something to fill the gap. So number one, for circumstances beyond our control, huge disappointment, huge regret, just has to happen. But let's hope that we can get Paris back into the EPT schedule later on in 2025. And I guess in a way, this is an advantage of not knowing what happens beyond Barcelona, is we can still move stuff around, right? In terms of where we can put certain events. Because right now, the only stops for 2025 that are confirmed are Monte Carlo in the spring and Barcelona in the summer. That being said, within the last 24 hours, we have announced a whole slew of other live events happening throughout the year, and these are the new PokerStars Opens. Now, the way to look at this, and again, I appreciate there might be some disappointment from some people that some of the local tours are disappearing, that there is no more UKIPT, there is no more Eureka, no more Estrellas, no more FPS, but what we're doing is we're taking that format and we're doing bigger and better events across Europe under the banner of Opens. So you still have that 1K main event. You still have the cup that runs over the weekend. And of course, where we have that 1K event at an EPT, so take Monte Carlo and Barcelona, for example, you've got the Monte Carlo Open at the start of that EPT festival. You've got the Barcelona Open at the start of that series. But you've also got these standalone events, which I think are going to be best in class and probably the biggest 1K main and the possibly the biggest festival in each individual country. Based around the model, if you like, of the Irish Open, which we know is a hugely successful event that takes place in Dublin over Easter. Not strictly speaking a PokerStars event, it's sponsored by PokerStars, mm-hmm. but it's not really our festival. But we can take that model and replicate it around the world. So it's going to kick off in Campione in Italy. The very first PokerStars cool. Open will take place in Campione in March. There are going to be events in Namur in Belgium at the end of May. Malaga in the summer. Remember, we did Malaga as a UK IPT slash Estrella. Yeah. Well, now it just becomes the PokerStars Open Malaga. That's going to be taking place in mid-June. There is a Manchester Open, so the UK wow. gets an event in October. There is going to be a Cannes Open, so France gets its very own event in December. And I'm sure there may be others to follow. But I think this is very exciting that we still have these festivals, still have these 1K events, but let's focus on doing fewer, bigger, and better, if that makes sense. And an opportunity for people to see some new places, right? It doesn't have to be, oh, I'm a UK player, I just go to UK events. You could win your way with PowerPath to the event in Cannes or the event in Namur. It's an opportunity to travel.
Yeah, you know, obviously I can't commit to anything because we have a lot going on this year, some stuff we haven't been able to tell people about yet, some very exciting things TV-wise coming up. But I would love, I know it's going to sound crazy, I'm not joking though, I would love to go to Manchester. I would love to go to PokerStars Open Manchester. I would love to go to Campione. I would love to go to Namur. I've never been to Belgium other than to travel through yep. on a train on my way to Amsterdam. So I'm hoping that we get to go to a couple of these PokerStars Open events because they have a different vibe to EPTs. They're yep. still high quality. They're still great PokerStars events, but it's a little bit more like a vacation almost on some of these trips. There's a little bit lower stakes, lower pressure, more fun, more community in a lot of ways too at these events. So it's kind of funny that we lost Paris for now, but it got broken up into a bunch of tiny little pieces and scattered all over the continent. I like it. I'm into it. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I do think the advantage of having these as a series of events across the year is it just makes it also easier as far as qualification is concerned, right? So if you go into the PokerStars client and go to events and are looking for satellites, right now everything is going to be pointing towards Campione because that's the first PokerStars Open. Previously, you may have seen, oh, I could qualify for this Eureka event here or this Estrella's event here, or and it's now it's just single. This is the event to go for, bringing players from across Europe to these locations to have this amazing experience. And hopefully we'll see big fields and big prize money in these individual Opens taking place across the year.
Hell yeah. I'm in.
Okay, so very quickly, just to clarify a couple of things that we talked about during the Prague stream. The date for the Sunday Million Anniversary has been confirmed. I know it's a few months away, but just want to put it on everyone's radar. It's going to be the first weekend of April that this is taking place.
Wow, that's a long way off.
It is Sunday, the 6th of April, will be the 19th anniversary of the Sunday Million Anniversary. Ahead of that, of course, and this starts this weekend, the New Year series, taking us from the end of 2024 into 2025. And as we said a few times while we were streaming in Prague, the opening event is a $55 Red Spade Open. Sadly, Joe and I are not able to play this, but there'll be many PokerStars ambassadors in that tournament. If they've got a Red Spade against their name, you know there is a bounty on their heads. That should be a pretty fun one. One thing I will get to play, and this is breaking news as it were, there's a live stream from the Hippodrome on Friday the 20th. This show comes out on Friday the 20th. So if you're listening to the podcast, day of release, there is a live stream on the Hippodrome Live a YouTube channel, a 2-5 cash game featuring a few PokerStars ambassadors, Sam Grafton, Adam McCullough, Marley Sprague, and myself. And I'm going to be playing and hosting this stream. And I'm hoping it's going to be a bit of fun. And I'm also slightly concerned that the world is yet again going to get to see how bad I am at poker.
Look, it's a lot easier to hide how bad you are at poker in a cash game. You can get away with a lot more. There's a lot more creativity. You can reload. You don't have just the one tournament life. So I think you'll be fine. I mean, look, you might. How much you buying in for? $1,000?
500, I think, is the sit down. 100.
You might
blinds.
Lose 500 pounds, but whatever. It's not that bad.
Yeah, and I think my primary focus is going to be on just, you know, making sure that everyone's included in the conversation, that we're having a good time. It's, I know you've done this before, Joe. When you're doing that dual role of trying to be a player in the game, but also be the kind of host of the kind of round table discussion and the host of the live stream, it's, you can't always keep your brain in two places at once. So I do think the poker is going to have to be secondary for the good of the production. But
the thing that you won't have to worry about that I did was we were on live television, so I was having to take us to commercial breaks in the middle of conversations. I'd be like, hey, Joseph Kahn, like, hold off that story about Eminem, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, but when we get back, more. So but it can be a little distracting, yes. So that'll be a fun stream. Let's see, am I going to be able to watch it? Da, 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 da. Well, I'll be at my parents' house, maybe.
8 p.m. UK time. So that's going to be 3 in the afternoon.
I'll just be landing. Maybe I can pull it up on my phone or something, because I'm actually quite curious to watch it.
Yeah, I think we're looking to do 8 p.m. till midnight. This is on the Hippodrome YouTube channel. I'll make sure there are links on social so people can watch along. But yeah, just a fun pre-Christmas 2-5 cash game with opportunities for the audience to win tickets to the New Year series.
Why don't we hop in the Discord and everyone weigh in on who they think the winner will be?
Sure.
Will be the big winner and or big loser. If you have any predictions, jump in the Discord and let's hash it out ahead of time.
Yeah, but a very different experience to be at the table rather than in the booth behind the mic, as we were recently in Prague for the EPT. They want to pull up a chair, I tell them do it if you won't. Be damn if they do, won't lose sleep if they don't. See, I done paid my dues, I had to struggle too long. I came this far, but I'm planning to go farther. When you work this hard, you deserve to party harder. I came this far, but I'm planning to go farther. Last chance to hear this festive rap, which was the theme for EPT Prague 2024. Before we get into the EPT, I guess we should talk about the last Eureka in Prague.
Yeah, so I don't know. I was pretty excited. I was telling everyone, look, I flew there a little early. To play a smaller event. There was only one thing that fit into the schedule, was the 550 Eureka Cup.
Yes.
And but I was telling everyone, oh, this is my first EPT event. This is my first EPT event that I've ever played. Can we count it as an EPT event or not? Where did we land on that?
I think it kind of is a Eureka event. I think the lines are blurred. Strictly speaking, you were at an EPT stop. You had the EPT experience. Would that event be on the schedule if it was an EPT? I don't know. Mm. I don't know. But hey, look, does it matter in the grand scheme of things?
It doesn't matter, because I did get a Czech Republic Hendon Mob flag.
Exactly.
This is not something I ever thought I would care about. I didn't think I would. I mean, I'm not really a flag chaser, but it is kind of fun to play poker. Like, I always sort of told myself that because we couldn't play at these events, that I didn't really want to. And I'm not going to lie, to get to play one little event at the start of these series, I think not only is it fun for me, I think it gets me in the right mindset. I think it gets me into poker. I think it gets me more excited to talk about poker. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Now, what happened was I landed in Prague and I immediately met up with a friend and went to go play Ultimate Texas Hold'em at another casino. And I stayed out super late. And I don't know if you guys know this or not, but these Eureka events, especially in Prague, are insanely popular. And so what happened was I went home, and it's very rare I don't have to be at a particular place at a particular time. And I was like, I'll just wake up. I'll late reg. I had budgeted myself 2 bullets for the Eureka event. And what happened was, by the time I was ready to go register, the line for alternates was 2 hours long.
This was clearly a sign of things to come. We did not know that the numbers in every single tournament in Prague would be huge. And clearly, this was the point where you're like, I think this is going to be a pretty big festival.
So rather than register at 3:30, get my seat at 5:30 for the day 1A. Day 1B was actually the same day. It was a turbo flight, 20-minute levels instead of 30-minute levels. I registered early for that one, which started at 6 p.m. I was there on time. I was in my seat. I was well rested.
Yeah.
And this was not your typical tournament for me, at least card distribution wise. I got dealt aces three times in the first hour.
I mean, not being funny, when it's a turbo and you just need to play hands and you need to win pots, perfect. Perfect timing, Joe.
Absolutely. And I had aces three times. I had kings twice. I really sort of ran it up and sort of doubled my stack in the first couple of hours. But as you know, poker, especially turbos, I was like, what have you done for me lately? Because by hour number four, that sort of card distribution had ended, and I lost a flip, you know, a very standard flip. I think it was like ace-queen versus nines. I don't even remember which one I had, to be perfectly honest. That brought me down to right back to starting stack again. Then I lost another hand with pocket queens against another short stack. So I become right back to the level that I'm used to.
Yeah.
As we're approaching the bubble in like the 12 to 14 big blind range. And then what happened was, again, I started picking up hands again, but I'm too nervous to play post flop. So I get ace king, I shove it under the gun for 18 big blinds. I get pocket queens, I shove for 22 big blinds. So I'm picking up the blinds and annies in these spots, but not really maximizing the chips. And I keep assuming because it's a turbo, someone's going to call it off against me, but they're really not.
No.
So I'm slowly chipping up, maybe around 22, 23 bigs. When it folds around to the button, I'm in the small blind. I have pocket aces, and the button raises, and the button's got about 18 bigs. And I'm like, yes, great. And so I just shove, and then the big blind shoves.
Oh.
And has about 20 bigs as well. And the original razor folds, and the big blind had pocket kings. And yeah, I coolered the fuck out of somebody, like three off the money, maybe like 10 off the money, actually, I should say. And now I've got like a 44 big blind stack.
Okay, so now you can just comfortably coast into the money.
I can comfortably coast into the money, but now I actually, now there's pressure on me because now I can make a mistake. You can't really make a mistake on like eight big blinds near the bubble, right? Like you just kind of, it's push fold. Now I'm like, oh crap, I have chips again. Luckily, a short stack shoved into me, an early position short stack shoved into me when I shoved in general, I should say, when I had pocket queens. And now I don't really know what to do because like I'm in middle position with a stack I don't really want to lose, but I don't want to just flat and let a bunch of people in. So I end up reshoving. No one calls. The shover had eights. So now I pick up even more chips and I burst the bubble. I literally burst the bubble, boy. I'm ecstatic. I'm in on one bullet. I'm feeling really good. And we bag.
Yeah, because play ends right when you get to 15% of the field. You're in the money. Then you bag chips and come back for day two.
I'm in the money with like 50 bigs.
Nice.
And then on day two, unfortunately, there was only a few minutes left on that level. So then, you know, obviously the blinds go up. Now I've got like 40 bigs. And I end up on day two getting moved three times and end up in the big blind every time.
That really sucks when that happens.
Yeah. So I go from like 40 blinds to like 22 blinds really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I played a hand that I think I completely butchered that I'm going to call the hand of the day of the year.
Okay.
Which is that I am in the big blind with king six of clubs.
Okay.
And I had 12 big blinds, but the blinds go up right before they get to me. So now I post, and I have king six of clubs, and the hijack min raises.
Sure.
And I think because now I've like, I had 10 big blinds, I put two in, so I have like 8 big blinds behind. I think I'm supposed to shove a suited king. I think that with that many big blinds, I think I'm supposed to just get it all in there. But I'm not really sure. And I think it can't be that bad just to peel.
I don't think calling is terrible.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I think I'm supposed to shove here. I think I'm going to get a lot of folds, yada, yada, yada. I still have some fold equity, but let me just call. So that's maybe a mistake there.
Okay.
Then what happens is the flop comes ace high, one club, and a six. And I check, and my opponent C bets, and I fold.
Yep.
And I think that that's probably really bad. I think that once I hit a six there and a club, I don't think I should ever really be folding. I just couldn't do it. I was just like, I think this guy's going to have an ace so often. It was at the stage of the tournament where like everyone's playing pretty straightforward because everyone was relatively short stacked. I don't know what the average was at that point, but I want to say it was like 28 big blind average.
Between 25 and 30 bigs is very standard at that point in one of these tournaments.
And so I was just like, I think that I'm up against an ace here so often. I just can't do it. I fold. I end up getting it in. And like when I'm in relatively early position, you know, during the next orbit with ace nine, I run into like ace queen and queens. So I'm just like drawing completely dead. And I did manage to ladder up a little bit and cashed, I think, for 1,500 total on a 650 buy-in. So very happy with my performance. I think that I got to get a little bit better at taking some chances. I don't really take that many spots. I don't bluff at all. I don't really like, you know, when I miss my draws, I never like rip it in with, you know, when I have a bad hand, that kind of stuff. I need to get a little bit better at that. I got to get a little bit better at, hey, maybe not getting down to six big blinds.
Yep.
Before
I relate to
it
everything
in.
You're saying. And just to go back to your hand of the day of the year, I completely relate to where you're at with that. And I find myself, again, trying to learn by osmosis from what I'm watching on the live stream and seeing people defend their big blinds so wide with hands like king six of clubs and then not really knowing what to do post flop. It's like, well, I've caught a piece of it, but I don't really have much of a stack to keep continue calling bets, and then wish I just folded pre-flop and not put myself in these insane situations where I'm out of position with half a hand. I think we're both aware of areas where there's room for improvement or things we need to do. That's not necessarily a bad situation to be in. If you can identify the weaknesses, if you can identify the things that you're not doing that you need to do more of, then at least there's kind of room for progress.
Yeah. So hopefully we get more opportunities to play in the new year. I'm actually, you know, even the tournament I played before this, which was pure torture because I just had no cards the whole time.
Yeah.
I am enjoying being out with the people and being in the mix and sort of just being more immersed in the poker environment. And I'm really grateful for those opportunities. And I hope they continue in 2025.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the Cup is my favorite tournament to play at any live event. I love the fact that it runs over a weekend, so it's great for people who are just in town for a couple of days. Always have fun in those ones. So then, obviously, you have to work, Joey, because we've got the main event, the live stream of the last 5 days. And yes, the fact that there was a huge line of alternates for the Cup was an indicator that every tournament was going to be up 15-20% year on year. You talked about low expectations with the cannibalization, shall we say, of the live poker market right now at this time of year, with three massive events taking place at once. There's that concern that, are we going to start to see Prague decline? No. I think it shows that there is still a healthy appetite for poker in Europe for people who don't want to go to the Bahamas or don't want to go to Vegas. I never thought in a million years that we'd have a record-breaking main event, though. Never thought we'd have the biggest field we've ever seen in the 5K main event in Prague. But very happy to see that happen. And was very happy with the overall kind of vibe and the way in which the tournament ran over the 5 days that we streamed it.
Yeah, and I think it's indicative not just of the health of poker in Europe, but worldwide. Like, none of the events really struggled. I think WSOP maybe had a little bit of shenanigans that went on with their guarantee, but still successful events in every single part of the world that they went on in, and that's good for all of us.
It is. And we can't ignore the external factors as well. We know that to a certain degree, the poker economy has become linked to the crypto economy, and crypto surges, that means that more people are staking other players, and it means that there are more people willing to gamble with some of their profits and play. So that is going to be an element as well. But this is a popular destination, right slap bang in the middle of Europe. And it was a genuine international mix, as evidenced by the difficulty we have pronouncing certain names at the feature table.
And I bang on about this every year, about how Prague's my favorite stop, and because of the Christmas time and the city itself and this and that. But one thing I forgot about, and even though the Prague Hilton has its drawbacks, the social scene there is probably the best of any of the stops as well, because people really do congregate in the hotel.
Yeah.
There's two main bars. One of them is open 24 hours. It really is a great place to connect with the community. The way they have that beer garden set up in the middle of the lobby, every night people end up there. You spend time with people that you know, but you don't always end up getting a chance to have a beer with. All those beers all year round, you're like, oh, we should have a drink. We should do this. We should do that. That all happens in Prague, mostly because of the setup in the hotel. And I forgot about that. And it really was this year, before we get into the main event, just a delight hanging out and all the stuff that Stars put on there. I think there was free drinks every single day. I think there was a happy hour at that bar in the lobby. So it was really great connecting with people that you sort of bump into the whole year round. I stayed up playing drinking games till like 4 a.m. one night. Can't remember the last time I did that. So Prague really is a special place.
So my biggest takeaway from the main event is it's been a while since we've had a live stream where, generally, let's be brutally honest, the story points we lean into. I mean, yes, you meet some new characters, and I don't think this event was any exception. But also, you're looking at former champions, and you're looking at big-name pros, people who are, you know, members of PokerStars Team Pro. Those are the kind of main stories you're following. And I think with this event, we lost all those people quite early on.
Yeah.
By day four, no potential two-time winners, no red spades, but the story then, the storyline, or our focus then shift to people who have come close in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Previous finalists, people like Dan Kishu, people like Pedro Marks. But there was a story that we couldn't really talk about. And that story was Anton Bergstrom. We knew Anton Bergstrom is what if God. We knew this guy, and we're talking about the fact, he made the final table of EFT Barcelona back in 2005. But the bigger headline was, this guy won the only two editions of EPT Online. In 2020 and 2021, he won back-to-back online EPT titles. He has two EPT main event trophies. But we have to respect the fact that he wasn't really comfortable with having his real-life identity linked to his online handle. And it was only on the penultimate day when we just kind of said to him, I think Cedric went to speak to him and said, it's a huge deal for us. Yeah. It's such a big story point that you could potentially be the first three-time EPT winner. That he's like, do you know what? Go for it. And it was so good to be able to tell everyone that, ladies and gentlemen, is what if God. Anton Bergstrom is the guy, and we had that story coming into the final table. But sadly, it did not work out for him. But still proves, a guy who's been playing poker for more than two decades and is still having amazing results.
I took it as kind of like a Christmas gift from him to us to be like, you know what? Sure, why not? Go ahead. You know, for him, after all this time, to say go for it, I really did think he did us a solid. The whole community is solid, because to be able to rally around something like that and know who like a hero is in the online world, I really do think was kind of a gift. You mentioned Dan Kishu. Dan was back. Did he the unofficial final table, right? He went out ninth.
Yeah, sadly, he went out. Let's talk about the other Romanian player at the final table. Because, again, we talk about narratives, and we did have a situation in Prague last year where Ion Chite came in as the monster chip leader, built that stack, and then lost a lot of it and ended up finishing second, and Paul Runken found himself in the same situation. Came in as big chip leader, achieved incredible dominance over the rest of the table when we were four-handed, three-handed, and had that dominance as well when we got heads up. But through no fault of his own, kind of lost that. We then get to a situation where things are even Stevens. We then get a deal agreed. Then we see the pendulum shift back in Paul's direction. And then suddenly in two hands, it shifts to the point where we flip reverse it. Pedro Marques is now the big stack. And on the very next hand, it's over. And I guess I could question whether Paul overplayed Queen Jack in that final hand. But I don't want to take that away from him because he was in control of that table for the longest possible time.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a complete force. And to be honest, James, I don't know what happened in the heads up. Because the last I saw, Paul Runken had a huge chip lead. I saw Pedro double up. And then it was like, you got to go down and interview the winner. I thought I was going to interview Paul. And it turned out it was Pedro. So those two hands that flip that you're talking about, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
So it must have been quick and it must have been dramatic.
Well, let's talk positively about Paul and talk about one of the hands that you did see. And it was on the previous day. And I think you've called it out as one of the best bluffs that you've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the best bluff because I think that maybe some people out there might have some different opinions of Paul than I had. I think that I was kind of enamored by him because everything was working out in his favor. I don't know like what the actual heroes think of him, but I will say that that three deuce bluff is one of the most entertaining bluffs I've ever seen. I remember Georgi, you know, having the seven deuce bluff was like super interesting and fun. This one, I think, is even more intricate, more complicated, and more bananas in a lot of ways.
Yeah, make sure you go back and check it out on the replay. And it's probably one of those hands that is going to get clipped and just disseminated across social platforms for the next 5 to 10 years. But Paul was the runner-up. To the victor go the spoils. And by spoils, I mean the trophy, the title, the first prize, and the opportunity to talk to me and Joe on the Poker in the Ears podcast. So we say, Pedro Marques, congratulations and welcome to the show.
You guys, thank you. It's a pleasure.
I mean, you're still smiling. This is great because, Pedro, I got to tell you, the audience knows this. When I have to interview the winner, that for me is sometimes the most stressful thing. And a lot of the time it's because the winner doesn't seem that happy or they don't care. Or they want to go do something else or they only had 5% of themselves. But I can see that you were happy and you still are happy. So talk to me. What does this mean to you?
As I said, this has been a dream of mine for a really long time. I've been playing the tour for 10 years, and obviously every event that you go, the main tournament for every player, you think it's an event, right?
Yeah.
Doing a deep run and finishing the job, winning the main, it's crazy. I still can't believe it. It was an unbelievable day. I still have chills when I think about it. It's crazy.
Because if we go back to 2018, which is when I think you first came onto our radar when you had the deep run in Barcelona and made the final table, and you're cutting through a field of like near enough 2,000 players, is there part of you that thinks that was my chance, this was my opportunity, and it's going to be really hard to get back here again?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, this is so hard. There will be people that will play every stop for 20 or 30 years and they won't manage to make a final table in this one. It's so hard to make it. And obviously, after that final table, I had a very sore feeling after that, because I didn't know if I would be able to do it again. But yes, still, I after that, I didn't lost the dream to do it again. So that's why I kept on playing and always with the goal of making it again and finishing the job.
And then, of course, you had that final table appearance in the Bahamas, in the PSPC. That tells you, oh, I can do this again.
Yeah. That one was an even bigger one. A lot of money up top.
Yeah,
I think I was more prepared in that one than I was in the first one. I felt a lot of pressure in the first one, Yeah, things didn't go my way, but still was, for me, what was a huge achievement, and was really happy about it. But also after that, I was like, I have to do this again. I have to keep on playing, yeah. And I have to win this one day.
Yeah, for sure.
So your desire to win is there. You know how difficult it is to win. While this is happening, is money a concern, or are you making enough along the way? Are you also like, oh shit, I got to win something to make a living?
Money is always really important, obviously. But yeah, I've been playing for so long. Nowadays, money is not that important anymore. Still very important, but not as important as it was before. And but yeah, nowadays, I was more searching for that trophy and that moment,
yeah,
than the money, for sure.
Well, let's talk about a little bit more about money. You made a deal at the final table. That's something that James and I, we're fans of deals. We like the players to secure a good deal for themselves. What was your mindset going into the deal, and what was your goal?
I mean, in this kind of events, the money up top is such a crazy amount. It's so much money. And obviously when we start the heads up, I was with such a huge, he has such an advantage of me that wouldn't happen for sure. In the back of my head, I was always thinking, if we get to similar stacks, I would like to look at numbers, because even though I thought at the moment that I have an advantage, because I've been playing more than him for a long time. I think I've been in that position more times than him. Even things are like that. I think that in poker, everything can happen. If I get kings against aces, I'll get second, he'll get first, and I'll lose a ton of money. And so I think in those moments, I think people should think a little bit more about the money, because these kind of moments are unique. And I think you have to take advantage of it and take as much money as you can. And yeah, after the deal was secured, I was just thinking about, yeah, the trophy, and I just want to win this.
After you did the deal, did you notice a change in Paul Runken's game, in his attitude, in how he was playing?
It was at a certain point. I remember the end with the Jack 7, where I went all in on the river. I felt a change of energy. I felt like he was sore after that end. I felt like I went upstairs after that end. I think, I think something happened after that. Yeah.
I think you're right, because I was watching not on stream at that point. I was down watching live from the floor. And when you moved all in there, everyone is just sort of on the edge of their seat, because if he calls and he's right, it's over. And look, it could have been just that I got the coin flip right in my head, but I said, I didn't see any of the action, but just the feel I got right there, I was like, I think this is going to be a double up for Pedro. It feels like Paul is trying to make a loose call here. It feels like Pedro's got it. It feels like this is going to be a momentum shift. It all sort of felt like that exact moment. And when that happens and that call happens, we talked about this when I spoke to you on stage. Like, you're really good at not showing your emotions out there. But what was going on inside your brain after that double up?
That double up was the moment that I felt like maybe I can do it. Because when we started, he had such a huge advantage. It would be hard. And he was playing hard as well, playing really aggressive. So I knew that I had to get the double up, otherwise it would be really hard for me. And when I got that stack, I was like, now I'm playing deep with him. And I think I'm prepared for this kind of situations. I already know how he's playing. And I felt like, yeah, with this stack, I can manage to win. I can, yeah.
So let's talk about Paul a little bit, actually. I'm curious what you think of him as a player. His style seemed kind of unconventional to us, but it seemed to be working. Was that your read as well?
Sure, it was. Like I said, he was playing crazy aggressive. People were not able to go through it. The people were almost folding every time. He was an orthodox style. Like, it was the first time I've played with him. I have never seen him before, but it's never easy to play with a guy plays like this. Never easy, and even more when you're playing so deep in a tournament, because the money starts ringing, right? And people get more scared, I'll say.
Yeah. And it doesn't help as well when someone is playing that aggressively, has that monster chip lead, and also they're catching cards as well. If not getting dealt premiums pre-flop, getting there by the river, and that just, it's kind of a very, very, how do you combat that if someone's just kind of like, can't lose?
In poker, you have to have patience. Obviously, he was doing his job. He had such a big stack. He was doing his job by being aggressive, putting pressure on others. And when you're shorter than him, you have to just wait, because there will be a moment where you'll have an opportunity to catch him. And that was my plan, basically. Of course, as well, I was second in chip, so I was in kind of a jail because of the other short stacks.
Yeah.
So I had to be really, really aware of the other stacks and be careful, because I didn't want to obviously bust before the other short stacks.
Yeah, and we saw that a few times when we were four-handed, whenever you were under the gun, Paul was in the big blind, and we saw several. Pedro opens, it's round to Paul in the big blind, he shoves, Pedro folds. That just seemed to be the kind of classic narrative every time that we had that dynamic.
He made like really, really big shoves at a certain point. He was shoving me so much, like 60, 70 big blinds. And yeah. I was not expecting that, for sure. But that was a strategy that he wanted to apply. He for sure knows that I was in a jail and I couldn't call too wide. So, he started applying me max pressure.
Yeah.
What preparation did you do in between the sort of day five and day six? Did you go back and watch the day five coverage to try to get a little bit more of an understanding of what Paul was up to? Because he was clearly he was bossing it even then, and really made himself the main character of that. I would have been really curious to go back and see what he had in a lot of those spots. Did you do that?
Yeah, for sure. I've watched full coverage of the TV table when he was there, because on day five, day four, I didn't play with him on TV table. I was on the other tables, but yeah. I saw full coverage of the TV table, and I saw how he was playing. And day five as well, when we finished the day, I went to my room and I watched everything. Not only him, but the other players as well. But obviously, I had more focus in his play, because he was the guy who was the chip leader and could have put more pressure on me. So I had to know more about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the three deuce bluff? From my, just as an entertainment factor, that's one of the most entertaining hands I've ever seen. But I'm curious, from you as a very studied player, I assume, what did you make of that?
Said it in 10 years of poker, I don't know if I ever saw such a crazy bluff. in a theoretical aspect, I don't think it is possible to play that in that way. But I think he was fighting with that guy. He was like in a specific thing with him, and he was searching for that spot, you know. And he said it on the turn. I already knew what I was doing, even though the other guy would speak first. He was saying, "I already knew what I was doing." And on the river, Siegfried, if I'm not mistaken. So long as well to make his action, and that helped him to make his aggressive action after that, because everybody in the table saw that Siegfried didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
he was not sure about his end. He was not sure if he should value bet or not. And Brunken is a guy of I think he, yeah, he knows he's a feeling guy, and he felt that he was weak and he took advantage of it.
Yeah. While we're asking your opinion of hands played by other players, I also want to bring up Jae Hung Park, who, by the way, I just want to salute for laddering spectacularly, being a short stack nine-handed and getting third. That is a great result. If you ever want to see, like, you know, how to handle ICM, look at that guy. But there was a hand where both he and Dan Kishu were short stacks. Both had about 10, 12 big blinds. And Park could see that the blinds were going up in 3 minutes, and Dan Kishu was going to post the big blind and the big blind ante next. He used his time bank cards to ensure that the clock would tick over and that Kishu would post on the next hand. I'm interested in whether you think that this is an absolutely fair tactic and a fair way to use time bank cards, or whether it's kind of borderline as far as kind of game etiquette is concerned.
Opinion, I think it's part of the game. We have the time banks. We have those 15 seconds pre-flop to use. So I think it's part of the game. I think he, in my opinion, I think it's fair to do it. And he was very aware of it, which I congratulate him. Myself, I wouldn't use time banks on it because I think time banks are so, so important. So I wouldn't waste on it. But he was in such a low position that maybe it's important that that guy gets a bigger big blind in his blind and he can ladder up. So I think it's fair.
Okay, I accept that. I think I've just come to the conclusion I'm too nice to play poker, Joe.
Yeah, right. No, it's exactly it. I'm too nice and too dumb, honestly.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I wouldn't even,
good, yeah, basically a good combo, yeah.
I wouldn't even think to do that.
Yeah.
Pedro, we play this drinking game sometimes where it's we're all on the same team and we're all trying to win together, and it's a hard game to win, and we end up playing for hours. But then when we win, we're kind of like, oh, well, what now? And I'm just wondering if you have that feeling now. You did it. You did it. You won the EPT. Like, what now?
So, Joe, I actually, I don't know. As I said, I haven't been playing many stops nowadays. I have a 3-year-old son.
Hey, congrats.
And, I've been enjoying my family more, and I started playing cash games again, PLO cash games, which gives me the opportunity to have a 9-to-5 life, you know?
Yeah.
It gives me the opportunity to spend more time with my family. But now, honestly, I don't know. I love tournaments, of course. I never lost that love. I still love tournaments. I love it until the end of my life. But I don't know. I'll for sure be in Monaco. I'll go there and defend my title. But I don't know, man. Let's see what happens.
If there's one thing I know about poker players, Pedro, it's the idea of having kind of objectives, dreams, aspiration. It's like you wanted this title. You now have this title. So it's kind of, right, what's next? How far behind João Vieira am I on the Portuguese all-time money list? And can I get to number one?
Yeah, James, that is not that important for me. My battle is always with myself, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, I would love to be on first place. I will not say that I wouldn't love, but for me, it's more about my accomplishments. And obviously, I can tell you a lot of other things that I would like to achieve in poker. Money or be on top of the all-time money list is not important. Maybe I'd like to win a bracelet or another EPT for sure, or something like that. That's it.
Just one last easy question for me, and I know that your last name is a very common name, I assume, in Portugal. But you're not related to the PT fisherman, are you?
No. We are close friends.
Cool.
No, we're not. We're not. We're not parented.
Well, now he's got to catch up to you and win an EPT.
He will do it easily, man. That guy is a crazy, crazy.
He's good. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's crazy is that both of you were kind of in contention in the PSPC. And it's kind of like, it's going to be really hard to sell this on TV that these two guys are not related. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Pedro, we've enjoyed following you over the last few years and look forward to seeing you at many a more feature table, many more of a final table, and look forward to seeing you on the EPT in 2025.
Well, you for sure see me there, and I hope to see you guys there.
Awesome. Thanks, Pedro.
Thank you, guys.
Well, we're going to close out this episode of the podcast. We're going to close out 2024 with a special edition of Superfan versus Stapes. Every now and then, we allow a member of the live stream production team to come on the show. Remember when Graphical Hugh came on and spectacularly failed to know his onions about Tom Hanks movies? Well, today, it's the turn of Harry Kirby. Harry, I realize I've now known you for 15 years. How scary is that?
That is a long time, yeah. We go a long way back, 15 years.
Back to the Sky days. And I think the most important thing to say is, in addition to occasionally working on poker productions, both the live streams and the TV shows, you work in proper motion pictures.
I do indeed, do indeed. Me and my brother do a bit of directing now and again. And directed our first feature film that came out a couple of years ago, which was exciting.
It's now on Netflix, come on.
Yeah, just went on Netflix. Went on Netflix in the UK, other areas around the world as well, which is very exciting. Yeah, first film on Netflix, so feel pretty proud of that.
And Harry, I was hoping you could. We don't usually do this at this point of the show, but I think that we don't have a ton of time for a full length interview, which I'd like to do with you at some point. But you sort of did this by. I want you to tell people about the journey you took to become a film director and how you made it happen, just as briefly as you can, because I think it's a somewhat inspirational story. And I get a lot of people that write to me, Joe, how do I make it in XYZ creative field? And I always say to them, you got to go out and start doing the stuff. So I'm just curious if you would agree with that and how you actually did it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like classic cliche advice, but yeah, the best advice is just to go and make stuff. You know, you think you're ready to make a feature film, but you're probably not if you haven't had much practice and made stuff and had the experience of the million things that are going to go wrong, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, like get people together, find a community of like people around you that are into making film and stuff. It doesn't matter if what you make at first is terrible. It's all good practice, and you'll keep getting better. And the more you're making stuff, the more stuff you have to show when you finally get to a stage when you could make a feature. As far as me and my brother went, we had a YouTube channel, and we would just put out geeky short films. We started off with a live-action Dragon Ball Z trailer, like fan trailer that we made, that we knew that would do well because the fans were kind of after that. So that blew up, and then after that, we were just kind of constantly making shorts. We would do some fan films, X-Men, Batman, stuff like that. But then we would make our own original stuff. And eventually that led to us having like this like team of people that we work with regularly that we could kind of call on to help us make cool stuff. And eventually we made this kind of proof of concept for a film that we'd written. And we put a lot of effort and time into that. And that was kind of a culmination of a lot of our kind of team and skills kind of coming together. And then we took that and tried to kind of get this feature made using this proof of concept that we made. And in the end, we went after an actor that we wanted to be in the film, but he ended up saying, oh, I don't want to play the part you want me to play. But he, in the end, was so impressed that he said, you know what? I've got this feature film, Accident Man, that needs directors. Do you guys want to come and direct it? And then when Sony, who we made it with, were, you know, kind of investigating into us, we had a whole backlog of, you know, videos and action stuff they could look at, including the proof of concept. And that's kind of what got us the film. So even though the proof of concept didn't get us the film that we'd written, It kind of went up in a different direction and got us our first feature film. So, yeah, my advice would be just, yeah, make stuff. Go and make stuff. It'll be hard at sometimes. You'll have no money and stuff like that. But you'll meet people along the way, you'll make connections and stuff, and then when the time is right and if you've, you know, you've done the hard work, you can kind of, yeah, go on to features.
I would also highlight, Harry, that as well as having all that experience of just making content from shorts to feature length, you were also immersed in the world of cinema. Like, you've watched a lot of films. I mean, you were always questioning, have you seen this? Have you seen that? I mean, you seem to be at the cinema every other day of the week. And I think just knowing both the industry, but also just the back catalogue of everything that's come before is also an important part to kind of working in this field.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you see... Yeah, I mean, everyone is kind of taking from others in another way and putting their own spin on it. And when you've seen a wide breadth of stuff, it gives you, you go, oh, that the way they did that shot there, what if we did that and kind of tweaked it this way, or the way that scene plays out, or that one, like a very specific example, if it's a very weird, small little thing, but there's a scene in Heat where De Niro's at the cafe or the restaurant with the first time he meets, this is my film, I'm just going to blank, but meets the main female character.
Pacino. Amy Brenneman.
Yes. And there's just a nice bit of blocking where the camera sits behind them like this when they don't know each other. And then it moves across the counter and in with them when they do know each other, like a nice bit of cinematic language.
Yeah.
And we had a scene in the film where we used similar blocking, where it was just like that cool bit of blocking does what we need here. Hey. And yeah.
Dude, if you're going to steal from someone, steal from Michael Mann. I'm down with that. So ironically, that is the subject of the Superfan quiz. It's action movies, right? Because you've watched a lot of action movies. Joe, I know it's one of your favorite genres as well. So I expect this to be a pretty tight contest. And Harriet, you're not a member of PokerStars staff. Obviously, you freelance on our live stream production. So you're entitled to win the $109 Bronze Power Pass. But more important than that, you know you're going to get the Poker in the Ears merch. And I know you proudly want to rock that Pike t-shirt.
100%, 100%. I'll be
wearing it. Before we get going, I just want to say I loved Accident Man 2. I think it's a super fun movie. I'm so excited on Netflix. I'm excited to watch it again. I think it is. Hopefully, this is not a backhanded compliment. It's the perfect movie to sit around with friends and not take too seriously, and just sort of be like, oh my god, holy shit, look at this. And so. It does have some replay value in that respect. I think I saw it probably for the first time, I think a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And I could not be any more proud of you, my friend. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
Now it's on Netflix, Harry. It's on my list. Right. We have 10 questions. This is a producer Chris quiz. That almost rhymes. 10 questions, 2 points if you can answer it. Only 1 point if you need the multiple choice options. Options always available. And Harry, you get to go first. I need a number between 1 and 10. Where do you want to go on the board?
Let's go straight to 10, please.
Straight to question number 10. Oh, you picked a tough one. How many times is the F-bomb dropped in the movie Aliens?
Oh, my goodness.
Do I have to get an exact number here?
You do have to get an exact number, but remember, you can take multiple choice options.
So this is literally my favourite movie of all time. I've seen it a million times, so I'm just trying to think.
So you should have a vague idea.
Yeah.
I would say one thing. The options are quite polarised, so they should steer you. It's not like, 31, 32, 33, 34.
Let's take the multiple choice, please.
Okay. Is it 2, 25, 60, or 100?
Fucking hells, man. There's at least one right there.
I'm gonna go 60.
Ironically, it's only 25.
Oh shit, okay.
But do you know what? Even though you got the main question wrong, Harry, I'm gonna give you the option to answer the bonus question for a point.
Let's get bonus.
Which character says it the most?
Oh shit. I might have just
It's gotta be Hicks.
It is Hicks. Did you think it was going to be Hudson there, Joe?
I did think it was going to be Hudson, but I guess Hicks lives the longest, so it makes sense that he would have more opportunities for more F-bombs.
Okay, so you're
Hudson's
on the board.
Very sweary, but Hicks is, last a long
Yes. Harry's on the board with 1 point, and Joe, you can have any number other than 10.
All right, I'm going to bookend it. I'm going to go with question one.
What is the name of Kurtwood Smith's character in RoboCop?
Clarence Boddicker.
It is for 2 points.
Nice. I'm running hot so far. Harry, you know what? You're one of the people I'd probably want to beat the least because I love you, but I'm gonna cherish this so far that you picked a tough one and I picked an easy one.
So 1 and 10 have gone. The rest of the quiz is available to you, Harry.
Good. I'm gonna go 5.
Question number 5. Which crew member's body does Agent Smith infiltrate in The Matrix?
In the first Matrix film?
I'm assuming this relates to the original Matrix from 1999.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Multiple choice options are available.
Yeah, it's hard to remember a movie from 25 years ago, isn't it, Harry?
I was going to say, but I feel like he doesn't infiltrate a body until it's like the sequels. I don't feel like Agent Smith gets into a body in the first film. I'll take multiple choice, please.
Okay, so the options available are Tank, Link, Cypher, or Bane.
When does he infiltrate a body?
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't remember this at all from the movie, but I just have to trust the information that's in front of me.
I kind of feel like it's from the sequel also, Harry.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in the so it's not Tank. The only name I don't recognize out of the key crew is Bane, so I'll say Bane.
Bane for a point.
Wow. And
it's 2-2, but Joe, it's your question.
All right, so I see what he did. He went for the end, then he went for the middle. So I'm going to go for the middle of the end. I'm going to go 7 now.
Always coming. What breed of dog does John Wick's wife leave him?
A puppy.
That's not a breed. That is a.
I want to say, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Sure.
I want to say it was a boxer. It was so cute. I gotta play it safe and take the choices.
Okay, is it a Labrador, a Pomeranian, a Beagle, or a Cockapoo?
It's a Beagle.
It is a Beagle for 1 point, and you have a 1 point advantage going into the next round. Just to clarify, we have 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, and 9 available, Harry.
I'll go the middle of the first end, and I'll go 3.
Number 3. Everyone knows the name of the building in Die Hard, Nakatomi Plaza. What airport is Die Hard 2 set around?
See, this is tough because it's an American location, so I think I would know it. You guys got to remember stuff about other countries.
Okay, I think I have the answer in my head. I should go with it. I'm going to take the multiple choice and just see if it's there to confirm.
Okay, is it O'Hare International, Dulles International, LaGuardia, or LAX?
LaGuardia.
It's Dulles International in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Okay,
Joe, you're up.
Okay, I'm going to go for the middle of what Harry just picked, so I'm going to go number 2.
Question number 2. Which famous guitarist co-wrote the score for Lethal Weapon?
I don't know. I can hear it in my mind. That's really moody noir music. I guess I'll take the choices.
Okay, the options are Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Slash, or Brian May.
Well, I'm glad I didn't go with my guess, because Prince was going to just be my guess straight up. What was the first one, Jimmy Page?
Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Slash, Brian May.
I'm going to go with Clapton.
Clapton was a frequent collaborator with Michael Kamen. That is correct. For a point.
Nice.
Joe, you're up 4-2 as we go into the penultimate round. 4, 6, 8, or 9, Harry?
I'm going to go up towards the top. I'm going to go 9.
Question number 9. Wow, I have to say, you're kind of running bad in terms of question selection. What is Sylvester Stallone's highest grossing film? And to be clear, the highest grossing film in which he was the lead. So, for example, Guardians of the Galaxy does not count.
Okay, and would the Expendables count technically in that?
Yes, it would.
Hmm.
So there are 4 options available to you if you need them.
Okay, let's go with the 4 options, please.
Is it Cliffhanger, Expendables 2, Rambo, First Blood Part 2, or Rocky 4?
And unadjusted for inflation, that's a shame.
I can only go with the information that's in front of me, Harry.
I'm going to go Expendables 2.
Correct, that's 4 points.
That's okay. a good guess. That's a really good guess.
And it's a correct guess.
What did you think of the Expendables movies, by the way, Harry? I don't know if you like shit talk movies since you're a director now. I hated the first one, loved the second one, hated the third one, quit after that.
Exactly the same. Exact same. Two was what the film was supposed to be like. It's just like all the characters, all doing their lines, all doing that was
great.
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to check it out then. I didn't make it beyond the first one. I hated the first one so much. Same. I didn't bother with any of the others in the series.
No, the second one's great. It's
okay,
perfect. Yes.
Good to know. Yeah. Good to know. Joe, 4, 6, or 8?
Let's go 8.
Question number 8. In which city does Ethan Hunt's team get killed one by one in the first Mission Impossible film?
Is it... I'm again just thinking out loud. There's like canals. Is it Venice? Italy? Vienna? There's canals in Amsterdam, but I don't think it was Amsterdam. I'm just going to go straight. I'm just straight up go for 2 points here.
Okay, go for it.
And say Vienna.
Where were you in the last 7 days?
Prague?
Correct. The movie takes place in Prague.
I had no idea.
There you go. Okay. We go into
I definitely
the
would have got wrong with the choices, too, so I'm glad.
Harry, you're behind by 1 point.
Okay.
So kind of going for two might be a good strategy here if you want to try and squeak out a win. You can have question 4 or question 6.
I'm going to go 4.
Question number 4. How much screen time did ILM's computer department take up in Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
It's going to be a very low amount.
I mean, he can't guess this without the choices.
I think you're going to need the choices on this one.
Yeah, I'll go choices, please.
Okay. 3.5 minutes, 8 minutes, 11 minutes, 56 minutes.
And we're talking ILM, the visual effects, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the lowest. I'm going to go 3.5 minutes.
You were good to go low. So you've tied the game with 4 points. So, Joe, you only need one.
Mm-hmm.
You just need 1 point. The bride vows to kill Bill and all of the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad in Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2. Who is the first person she kills? And I'm going to clarify something here.
Yeah.
Not in chronological order, but in movie order.
Because
the timeline of the film is different to the actual timeline. So,
well, good news for Harry is I have to take the choices.
Okay. So who is the first person we see her kill on screen in the movie?
Yeah.
Is it Bill himself? Is it Oren Ishii, a.k.a. Cottonmouth? Is it Vernita Green, a.k.a. Copperhead? Or is it L. Driver, a.k.a. California Mountain Snake?
I'm narrowing it down to Oren Ishii and... What was the choice C?
Vernita Green.
And Vernita Green. I can't remember what happens first, the scene in the trailer or the scene in the pagoda or whatever that is, the Japanese restaurant. I'm going to go with Vernita Green.
It was Vernita Green for a single point, and he squeaks out a victory. Just out of interest, had it gone to the tiebreaker, I'm interested to see where you would have gone with this line, Joe, because what normally happens, Harry, is Joe sets the line and then you go over or under. The question was John Matrix's body count in the movie Commando. How many people did Schwarzenegger kill in that movie?
45.
Would you have gone higher or lower than 45, Harry?
1 second. I'm going to go just under.
You should have gone way high. He kills 87 people in that movie. So had it gone to the tiebreaker, sadly, you probably still would have lost. But it's not about the power pass. It's about the merch. You get 100%. The t-shirt. You get the playing cards. You're a good sport, Harry. We love you, and we're glad you're part of our team.
Thank you, guys. Love you guys, too. And appreciate having me on. Looking forward to seeing the, getting the merch.
Thanks, Harry. We'll see you and hopefully another one of your movies next year.
Okay, Joe, before we go, we did say that as well as being our Prague recap, this was going to be our look back at 2024. Let's keep this very short and very simple. I'm interested to know your favorite poker moment of the year. I have two, one personal and I guess one more objective. Objectively, I would say that Barney Boatman winning EPT Paris was the standout moment
That's
of the year.
That's pretty great. That's a
me.
Great choice. Yeah.
Especially as someone, and we talked about this during Paris last year. I've known Barney since 2005, you know, took part in that TV show he did, Barney's Home Games. He's someone who's always been around on the circuit over those decades. And it was just genuinely a win for the good guys. And in the year that the European Poker Tour celebrated its 20th anniversary, to have someone who is at that very first stop in Barcelona win a title that year was just, it just felt perfect. Everything came together. And obviously with Barney then joining the Stars roster, seeing him at every event afterwards has just been an absolute delight. And for me, playing in that World Series event this summer, the Hall of Fame Bounty, and again, thank you to David Lappin for talking me into it, because I had no intention of playing this tournament, to then have my first ever World Series cash, to have a deep run, a decent score, but also I would say it was the best poker I played all year. You were talking earlier on about your run in the Cup and how, to a certain degree, you were reliant on getting big hands, and for a lot of the time, you're playing what I call cockroach poker, where you're just nursing a short stack and playing shove fold. That is 95% of the tournaments I play. This was probably the only tournament I played where I think I was actually playing through the streets, making good decisions. There was a hand against Landon Tice where I called his river bluff, which I was really happy about. So not only was it a good result, but I got there by not just running pure and not just by kind of winning all ins. So that was my personal highlight. Barney winning EPT Paris was the moment of 2024 for me.
There are a lot of great things this year. You know, obviously we shot the reboot of the big game last year, but the airing of it was this year. The audience response to it was this year. That was huge. Barney obviously was huge. Barney versus Eric Afriat is arguably the best poker moment of the year. On a personal level, even though it's just a 300 euro thing, the deep run in that Irish Open side event that I had was awfully fun. And I made that $8,000 last for a really long time. But if I was going to pick one moment for me that isn't any of those, if I got to go my own way here, I think for me, my poker moment of the year, not personal, but overall, would be Rania, her sort of splash onto the scene and the sort of Rania, Dirk Van Luke, him not noticing that won the hand and then he goes on to win the event. There's so many great things all encapsulated in that moment, which both has like a relative amateur in the, you know, in the form of Dirk Van Luke taking down a huge poker tournament and sort of one for the everyman. And at the same time, an origin story of Rania, who goes on to be not just a character in that event, but in Barcelona and then later on the big game, you know, all of that together, I think is a really great moment for me. And like a low light for me as well, as I'll just remind everyone that I completely botched the trophy presentation for Dirk Van Luke and literally had to scoop all the confetti up off the floor to put it back in the cannon and make him do it again. So it's like a highlight, low light,
and a low light.
character arc,
talented one,
all at the same time. Yeah,
but you're right. Following Rania over the last 6 months has been fun. I'm glad you brought up that result in the Irish Open, because that was also a good start to our year as PokerStars ambassadors. The fact that you had that final table, that big cash in the Irish Open, and around the same time, I started playing online again and had that deep run in the Sunday Million Anniversary, finishing in the top 100. And I kind of feel that we kind of like said, every now and then we can actually have a result. We can actually play this game and actually achieve something. So yeah, that was another highlight of 2024.
Yeah, it turns out we're not two fucking complete morons. All right. Coming up next time, my babies, it's going to be 2025. Our next episode is a bit of a long way off. Not really sure What all? Yes, I see you looking at your watch.
It's literally a month away. January the 16th, 2025 is when the first episode of the new year will drop.
All right, so who knows what'll happen between now and then. Let's not bother speculating. Let's be excellent to each other. Not think about poker for a few days, unless you're playing the New Year series.
Yes.
Podcast will be back. We're going to talk about probably a lot of movies and TV. Let's just enjoy.
We always do a pop culture season, catch up in the new year. But obviously, you know, we are focusing on poker as well. Hopefully there'll be the opportunity for us to play some poker in the month of January. We've said a few times already, we need to catch up with Stephen Song, who had some great results at the back end of this year. Jason Kuhn, the newest member of Team Pro. We need to hear his life story. So we've got some ideas of what we want to do, but we need more ideas. We need your suggestions of what you'd like to hear from the podcast in 2025. And you know where to go? Discord. There is the podcast discussion channel on the PokerStars Discord server. And I'll remind you one last time for this show, one last time for this year, that a link to that server is in the podcast description.
All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show, this month's show, this year's show. Until next time, for James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.